Curve crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Jets and the Sharks, 9 p.m. tonight from San Jose on this fine station. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And our home for Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We head out to Helsinki, Finland, where we're joined by Michael Trakos of the National Post. Michael, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Happy New Year.
Hey, thanks, guys. You too. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, as always, Michael. You're there covering the World Junior Hockey Championship, and of course, that's why we had you on. A tremendously entertaining game between the Canadians and the Finland and Team Finland earlier this afternoon. A disappointing result for Team Canada. You know, it was a function of just Team Canada could never get that one big save they needed, whereas at the end of the game, Team Finland was able to get a couple of the saves after their coach made the goalie switch early in the second period.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. There's like a multiple ways that you could have looked at it. They probably took one more penalty than they should have. They probably weren't as disciplined as they needed to be. They didn't get that one bounce that they probably needed. Yeah, you mentioned the goaltending. That definitely was a problem. But, you know, this was a flawed team all tournament long. There were a lot of questions. And while the team did probably play their best game of the tournament against Finland, it was still a flawed game. From the goaltending to the penalties they took, to the fact that they really should never have gone into kind of a river hockey game with Finland. This wasn't the same Canadian team that we were accustomed to seeing last year with Connor McDavid, Max Domi, and everyone else.
You know, Michael, watching that game, it was clear that Mackenzie Blackwood was fighting the puck throughout the game, and there was a point in that game that you thought maybe that Dave Lowry was going to turn to Mason McDonald. Do you think if that change is made that maybe they have a better chance at winning this game?
Could be. And I was sort of surprised that Lowry didn't make the change. Either when Finland went up, I think it was 3-2, or when they scored even the fifth goal. But you know what? Lowry just stuck with Blackwood, and I don't want to put the loss on him because, let's face it, we're talking about a teenager here. We're talking about a tournament where players in front of you are making mistakes. And this is supposed to be a team event. And in the same way, the blame has to go around. And I blame Mackenzie Blackwood probably for not having his best game tonight. If you score five goals, you generally should win a game. But you know what? Dave Lowry probably should have pulled him a little earlier. And while Mason McDonald wasn't giving the team a whole lot of confidence going into the tournament, something probably should have changed in the sense that you have to you just have to make a change sometime for the sake of it.
Well, Michael, Jake Virtanen obviously didn't have a good tournament. He only had one assist in five games and obviously took three penalties today, and including two on one play. I guess, why did Jake Virtanen struggle so much in this tournament? Because considering he was the only player with NHL experience heading into this tournament, a lot was expected out of him.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And as for the why, I don't know, because when you look back at like the history of NHLers who've been loaned to the World Juniors, guys like Nugent Hopkins, Curtis Lazar, Anthony DeClaire, there's more guys than I'm mentioning here, but typically they have their way in this tournament. And even a guy like David Pastrnak for the Czech Republic, he gets loaned, and he was arguably he was definitely the Czech Republic's best player, but he was arguably one of the best players in the tournament in the games that he was playing. So why didn't Virtanen get going? Well, I'll cite the injury he had that he was rehabbing from. He was on a conditioning stint with, I think, Utica Comets right before he gets loaned. And really, even before that injury, Vertanen hadn't been playing his best hockey. So you know what? Maybe it was just he came in cold. He was never finding. He never seemed to find his found his rhythm. And the one thing that kind of hurts Jake Vertanen is that not only is he not scoring, but he's taken a lot of foolish penalties. And to take three minor penalties in a game against Finland, where you got that much firepower for the Finnish side, it was just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, we're joined by Michael Trakos of National Post talking about the World Junior Hockey Championships. And Michael, you said in the last answer, you said Finnish firepower. And that's not usually something you associate with Team Finland. As I was saying to Ezzy in the last segment, you know, they're more, you think of Finland, you think of, you know, structure and discipline.
Good goaltending.
Good goaltending. This Finnish team is tremendous. You know, Puljujärvi, Aho, and Lane, the best line in the tournament by far. They combined for 38 points just for those three players. You know, is this sort of a new generation of Finnish hockey that we're seeing with the offensively skilled and, you know, dynamic offensive talent?
Oh, 100%. And I think Timo Salani's probably kicking himself for retiring because he probably loved to play with these guys. And, yeah, Puljujärvi and Laine both draft eligible. So whoever's in the bottom five are going to get two really good players there. And, yeah, the 6'3" guys like that shouldn't be able to skate and shouldn't be able to have the kind of skill that those two guys have. Sort of remind me a lot of like the way that Jeff Carter plays, because they're not going to really overpower you physically, but just you get them wide open. Both guys love to shoot the puck, and both guys can, are both kind of that rangy power forward type. So they gave Canada fits. They've given this whole tournament fits because of how they've played. And typically you don't see 17-year-olds take over what is considered a 19-year-old's tournament. So along with Aho, who's a Carolina prospect, a Carolina Hurricanes prospect, yeah, that was easily the best. There has been easily the best line in the tournament, and it's kind of changed how Finland, like you mentioned, has played. This is kind of a team that is almost almost sort of like Canada Light, in the sense that they love to play that physical grind-em-out game. And a guy like Leo Komarov for the Leafs is a perfect example of the Finnish style of play, but yeah, the really dynamic players like that don't come around too often, and you know, tip their caps to them. It wasn't so much that Canada didn't perform at this tournament; it was that the other countries around them have gotten so much better.
Michael, you just mentioned the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you've covered the Toronto Maple Leafs for many years. You're based in Toronto, and despite a very disappointing tournament for Team Canada, if you're a Leafs fan and you were watching today's game and you saw Mitch Marner with a couple goals and Kasperi Kapanen, who came over in the Phil Kessel trade, I guess the rest of the country is probably a little bit more depressed than the city of Toronto and Leafs fans. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah, you know what? Toronto is actually, well, with the exception of William Nylander getting the concussion, there's a lot of things that Toronto Maple Leafs have to be happy about with this tournament, because Mitch Marner, I thought, had his best game of the tournament against Finland. But two goals, he could have easily had a hat trick had he been able to complete that really kind of one-on-one individual effort right at the end. And Dmitry Timoshov for Sweden has been on their best line, just a tremendous playmaker that the Leafs were able to kind of steal in the fifth round. And Kasperi Kapanen, while he's hasn't put up the same kind of points or even close to what Laine and Puljujärvi have put up, the fact that he's going to the semifinals is another great kind of thing to happen. And I think even if you're just a Leaf fan, the fact that this is a rebuilding team and you're probably going to get one of those 17-year-old draft-eligible guys that are going to land in the top five or six, I think that's also kind of promising for a lot of fans.
Michael Trakos, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he joins us from Helsinki discussing the World Juniors. Michael, you know, obviously Team Canada disappointed, but for the organizers in Finland, you know, a pretty good, pretty star-studded semifinal matchup. Finland versus Sweden, fierce rivals, and U.S. versus Russia, also pretty fierce rivals. You know, this, I want to start with the Finland-Sweden game. Is that sort of the, is the focus of the hockey country in Finland on this tournament, or is it still sort of a backseat tournament overseas in Europe?
No, you know what? The Finnish fans have been coming out supporting their team, at least. All the games that I've seen Finland play at the big arena, which is sort of kind of like, it looks like an NHL arena in terms of, I think it's about 20,000 capacity, or just under 20,000, I would say. It's been sold out. Fans have been crazy loud. You walk around, and that's what everyone seems to be kind of focusing on in downtown Helsinki. Is a lot of the talk is just on the World Juniors and how other teams are playing. And the thing that's kind of really stood out is just how many Canadian fans are here.
Yeah,
you can't go like 5 feet without running into a Canadian, and they're coming from everywhere. Like I met Newfies, I met folks from Alberta, Winnipeg, BC, and literally hundreds and hundreds of fans have come from Canada. And tonight's game, I would say it was 70-30 split between Finland and Canada in terms of fan support, which is really tremendous when you talk about, or you think about, just how far away we are from Canada. So it's been a great atmosphere. I think organizers, what they're upset about is that they're losing the Canadian contingent, and you're not going to get that kind of atmosphere now that Canada's not in the semifinals.
Well, you mentioned the Canadian representation in the crowd, and I was thinking to myself as I was watching the game today, are these Canadians who are traveling to the tournament, or are they this many Canadians that live in Finland and I just don't know about
it? It's the Canadian diaspora.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met folks that are on what they call their double hat trick, where they've been to 6 straight World Junior tournaments. And I know some of those have been in Canada, or at least in bordering cities on Canada, like whether it's Grand Forks or whatnot. But the fact that the guys went to Malmo, Czech Republic, and now Finland, that speaks to just kind of how crazy, I guess, we are as a hockey nation. But, you know, I don't blame them. Coming here for the first time and covering this event when it's overseas, it's a great event, and I would definitely recommend it to any fan.
You know, Michael, you mentioned Timu Solani earlier, who had his jersey retired internationally at this tournament, and we have to ask you about Timu Solani because it's really, I think, law here in the province of Manitoba. Anytime someone brings up Timu, you got to ask about it. But what's it been like to be in Helsinki at this time with Timu Solani having his number retired, and what's it been like? What's the vibe been like for the greatest Finnish hockey player of all time?
It's really cool. He's hockey royalty. I think just in general. So when you go to Helsinki, where they just completely adore the man, it was really special. And I was there the night where he was honored and his number was officially retired from the national team and raised to the rafters at the Hartwall Arena. And it's really cool. They do it a little differently here than they do in the NHL when they retire your jersey. Usually in the NHL, the player comes down, he's just wearing a suit, and he makes a speech. Well, here it's like, it's completely different. They put him all, he wears his full uniform and skates around. And that, I thought that was the coolest part, is that you got to see Timu one last time in his jersey. So you're saying, okay, you're retiring the jersey, we'll put it on one more time, then we're going to take it off and put it up in the rafters. So I really love that fact about it. And, you know, it probably forced Timu to keep in shape, because, you know, the last thing you want to do is be like maybe 40, 50 pounds overweight and that jersey doesn't fit anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael Trakos of the National Post joining us from Helsinki. Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. What are you looking for in these two semifinal games that are going to take place Monday and then the gold medal game right afterwards? You know, is there anything that, any storylines in particular you're sort of keeping an eye on, or are you just waiting to see, you know, two, you know, pretty fierce semifinals between two pretty fierce rivals?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know what, the semifinal really, I'm sorry, Canada, but the semifinal consists of the four best teams in the tournament. And U.S., Russia, Sweden, Finland, they deserve to be there. They've been outstanding. And what I'm looking for is just some more great hockey. And if I'm going to predict who's going to advance, I really like Sweden against, I guess it's like against Finland. And I really do like U.S. against Russia. So I'm expecting a Sweden-U.S. final, and I'm going to stick with Sweden just because of how many returning guys they have and just how good their goaltender has been. I think he already has 2 shutouts in this tournament, so he's been fantastic.
Michael Trakos is in Helsinki for the World Junior Hockey Championships. He works for the National Post and Post Media News. Michael, appreciate your time this afternoon, I guess this early morning in Helsinki. We'll let you get back to it and travel home safe, and we'll see you soon back here in Canada.
All right, thanks, guys. Anytime. And, yeah, enjoy the rest of the tournament.
Thanks, Michael. Take care.
Cheers, Mike.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hit me with the horn, 20! Keep making noise! Keep making noise! Yeah! Oh, oh, oh.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you. A suspension in the NHL earlier this week as Brad Marchand, frequent visitor to the NHL's disciplinarian office, gets 3 games for his low bridge clip on the Ottawa Senators' Mark Borowiecki. I can't pronounce his name.
Borowiecki.
Borowiecki.
Yep.
That's a tough one for me to pronounce. Your thoughts on the hit?
The W is a V, essentially.
Yeah, Borowiecki.
Yep.
Okay.
There you go.
Your thoughts on the hit? As it happened right before, it happened on the 29th, right before, the Tuesday before the New Year.
Yeah, it happened the same night that the Jets were playing the Penguins.
That's right.
We've all seen the highlight by now, and it's obvious that it was a dirty hit, and, you know, whether you want to call it clipping or a low bridge or a low hit, it was a dirty hit, and Brad Marchand has a history of this, and I was surprised that he didn't get more games. And especially considering that, you know, Brad Marchand has the penalty from 2011 when he slew-footed Matt Niskanen. And then he also has the penalty that was on, I believe it was Chris Tanev back in 2012. It was against Vancouver. Yeah. I remember that.
A similar play where he low-bridged a guy into the boards. Yeah. I remember that was a Saturday afternoon game because that was the year after the Bruins and the Canucks played.
That's right.
In the Stanley Cup Finals.
And for a player like Brad Marchand, who, by the way, is not a one-dimensional player. I mean, this guy has 15 goals and 26 points this year.
Yeah.
He was having a good year. Boston could have used him in the Winter Classic, but he obviously wasn't available because he was serving the first game of the suspension. But to me, it really comes back to the NHL not suspending players enough for extremely dangerous hits. And for a player who has a history of suspensions, maybe they gave him an extra game, but to me, this is a minimum of 6 games. Mm-hmm. And you could argue that maybe for a player like Brad Marchand, if you really want to set an example, you maybe give him 10 games.
Well, you know, you go at a guy's knees, and that's what Marchand's done, is he's gone at guys' knees. That's his reputation. And, you know, you're going to piss off a lot of guys if you go at their knees and they're carrying the puck. The problem with this hit is Borowiecki is nowhere near the puck. I mean, the puck has gone up the ice, and Marchand just takes this opportunity. It's dirty. It's a really dirty hit.
It's a really dirty hit, and Borowiecki fortunately wasn't seriously injured, but there is a serious chance on a play like this that Mark Borowiecki could have had a serious knee injury.
Sure.
Or, you know, even worse, maybe he gets a concussion the way he lands.
Mm-hmm. Lands on his head.
So it's a play that needs to be taken out of hockey, and obviously, I mean, he's not getting away scot-free here, Drew. He did get suspended for 3 games, but I think when you're talking, again, about a player who has that history of a suspension, mm-hmm. and who is such a recognizable player, you know, Marchand, he's got the Stanley Cup, he's a top-line player for the Bruins. It's not like he's a bit-part player or somebody who hasn't really had a long career in the NHL. This is a very good player in Brad Marchand, a player who I would love to have on my team. Maybe, you know, you don't like the fact that he takes these you know, suspensions and he has the potential to really cause a negative impact on a game with one of these hits. But I think that if the NHL really wanted to send a message, they would have suspended it, like I said, for 6 to 10 games. 3 games at the end of the day, that's 1 week,
yeah.
Right? If you suspend it for more than that, he's out for 2-3 weeks. I think he feels it more, and it sends an impact. It sends a message to the rest of the NHL.
Well,
so again, the NHL Department of Player Safety, they had the reasons for coming to 3 games. But I'm just saying, based on his history and the severity of the hit,
well,
I think you could have given him more.
You talk about the Department of Player Safety, and I'm watching their video right now, and I'm just watching. And obviously, I'm not listening to the audio, but I'm watching them as they go through the litany of history of dirty checks that Brad Marchand has in the NHL, and they show the one with Borowiecki, and it's a terrible hit, and he's nowhere near the play. And then they show the one, it was Sammy Salo against with the Vancouver Canucks back in 2012. And you mentioned the slew foot of Derek Brassard in, you know, is similar last year. And so the NHL is going through this list of hits that the guy levels out, and they're all dirty, 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 and yet they only come up with 3 games. It's like you're making the case just watching the video here. They're making the case to suspend him for 6 games or for 8 games, And then they just come up with three games, and again, you know, it's 1 week. You know, Brad Marchand, given the style of play and given, you know, the rigors of an 82-game NHL season, a week off for him probably feels better coming back from a week off. Sure, he loses the money, but ultimately, what's the money when you make that much money on a per-game basis? Not a big deal. It seems like it's an opportunity to really send a message, and typical with the NHL, they don't ever send that message properly.
By the way, I think this is going to be positive for Brad Marchand. I don't think that Brad Marchand is going to stop playing with an edge, but I think he knows that the Boston Bruins are in tough to make the playoffs. They're right in there in the conversation for making
the playoffs.
Currently
fourth in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, a bad Atlantic Division Very bad, even though Florida's playing well and it's a nice story, but Montreal's certainly tailed off.
Yeah.
But for a player like Marchand, who knows that the Boston Bruins are paying him to score goals, sure, they're paying him to be a pest as well, but at the end of the day, they're paying him to score goals for them. I think that, you know, he's going to not be playing the next three games. Well, at least he's already missed a game, so next two games, but three games total, and he's going to be watching. And I think that, you know, this is going to have an impact on him for the better, because I don't think that he is at a point in his career where you can really say that he can't change his ways on the ice. He can still be an effective player without doing stuff like this. And the reality is, you know, he's the one who's going to pay for it. Sure. And next time, he'll get more than three games.
Yeah, next time he'll get four games or five games. It's the NHL's disciplinarian system is typically a joke and typically pretty lax.
He got off relatively easy, Drew, when you consider how cheap of a hit this was.
Let's hear from Brad Marchand. He cries his typical crocodile tears that don't mean much. Here's Brad Marchand.
I just want to acknowledge the situation that I've put my team in for being undisciplined and affecting the game for them, taking away from the excitement for the fans, being part of this rivalry and taking that away from them, and then also for affecting this game for myself and putting myself in a situation to not be part of this. So I want to apologize. And I truly am sorry to everyone about, again, the situation. And it was not my intent to make a hit or try and injure anyone in that play. It's very disappointing. It's obviously something we're all looking forward to. But I respect the decision that the league has made, and I'm going to live with it. Yeah, and that's the situation that I'm speaking of when I understand that I've put our team down where we've already have some injuries, and again, I've put them in a disadvantage. So, that is frustrating. Yes, not really. I didn't see how it all unfolded afterwards, and the extent of the hit. So it was dealt with after the fact. Well, again, I the intent was not to make a hit on that play, and it differs from past instances. So. I still don't think this is changing how I've approached the season.
Two things that jump out at me. One, I mean, you know, it wasn't my intent to injure him. Well, you went at the guy's knees and the puck was nowhere to be found. For the 100% your intent was to try and injure him. You're lucky that you didn't injure him. And second of all, what I find telling is he didn't once apologize directly to Mark Borowiecki in his meeting of the media there.
Andrew, actions speak louder than words, right?
Sure.
And we talked about Brad Marchand and how he has the history of penalties. He's been in the NHL for 7 years now. He's 27 years old. He's not, you know, a rookie or in his second year, and he's not 20 years old. He can't use that as an excuse. He has to stop doing this type of thing. Or as we talked about, next time he does something like this, he is going to get six games or maybe even 10 games, because then the NHL is going to face even more criticism, even though they tend to probably go on the conservative side of these suspensions. But I do think that Brad Marchand, as he gets older as a player, he's going to take this type of stuff out of his game. He can still be a pest, as I mentioned. He can be an aggressive player, finishing his checks, tough stuff like that. But, you know, this type of clipping stuff where you have the potential to injure other players, he's got to stop doing that. Because as I mentioned, he's a great hockey player.
Yeah.
When he's going, you know, he's a top goal scorer in the NHL. 15 goals, I mean, puts him right up there. So he's got to take this stuff out of his game, because he doesn't need to do this type of stuff. As you talked about earlier, Drew, that wasn't even part of the play, right? So, you know, he just has chance to really, you know, look at himself in the mirror during this little hiatus for himself, and, you know, kind of acknowledge that he needs to grow up and mature as a player.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Eric Stevens of the OC Register joins us to talk about the Anaheim Ducks, the Jets' opponent tomorrow night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Third and final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday evening here in Winnipeg, the Jets and the Sharks, 9 o'clock tonight, and of course tomorrow the Jets and Ducks at 8 o'clock. For that, let's head to the Illegal Curve Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined now by Eric Stevens. He covers the Anaheim Ducks for the OC Register. Eric, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, Drew, how are you doing today?
Very well. How about yourself? Happy New Year to you, Eric.
Same to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Jets and the Ducks tomorrow evening in Anaheim. The Ducks having just completed what I would say is their most successful road trip of the season, getting 5 out of 6 points against the 3 Western Canadian teams, the 2 in Alberta, and then an overtime loss, pardon me, a shootout loss last night to the Canucks. Are we finally seeing the Anaheim Ducks maybe turn a corner and get back to being what we expected the Ducks to be all season long?
Well, you know, Drew, I'm not sure that they've really, say, turned a corner. I think what we've seen is that, you know, they've found, at least right now, a formula of winning. And what it really is a renewed commitment to defense. And it's had been out of necessity. Simply put, they haven't scored consistently all year. They're the worst offensive team in the league. So out of sheer necessity, they've had to really turn into kind of a defense-first team in order to get wins here. On that trip, it certainly proved successful. I mean, they scored 3 goals in the 3 games, and yet won 2 of them, and could have possibly won the 3rd. So, in terms of turning the corner, you know, I don't know if they have. I think this upcoming homestand, which is a single season long 8 games here, I think this is where we're going to really see whether they're going to really build on this little shred of momentum that they generated on the road here, whether they're going to build on it and really make a move here.
Eric, you tweeted about this a couple of hours ago. Ducks defenseman Cam Fowler is going to be out of the lineup now 4 to 6 weeks with a right knee injury, an injury that was sustained against the Philadelphia Flyers the day after Boxing Day. Who's going to replace Cam Fowler in the lineup, and how would you rate Cam Fowler's play before he went down with that injury?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, to answer that first part of that question, Shea Theodore was brought up, 2013 first round pick of theirs, was brought up and made his NHL debut against Calgary and played in those 3 games there on the road. Now, he isn't directly replacing, you know, Fowler, in his spot in the lineup. They sort of reshuffled those 6 there. He's looked very promising in those 3 games. He hasn't looked out of place and moves the puck very well, much like what Cam Fowler does, and also skates very well. So they brought him up, and as far as Cam is concerned, I would say that it's a pretty big loss. I mean, this is the guy who I think is really coming to his own as a two-way defenseman. We know the skating ability, but he's made marked improvements there on the defensive side. And I think he's really sort of turned into a leader of that blue line. So, they're not going to be able to directly replace Cam. But, I think between, the Theodore and guys like Hampus Lindholm and Sammy Vatanen and veterans like Kevin Bieksa and Clayton Stoner, they're going to, maybe go about it in a more collective fashion to soak up those effective minutes that Fowler brought.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Eric Stevens of the OC Register, talking about the Anaheim Ducks ahead of the Jets' visit to Anaheim tomorrow evening. And Eric, prior to last night's game in Vancouver, John Gibson had received four straight starts for the Ducks, and he played in five straight games, having relieved Frederick Anderson after his shaky performance against the Islanders. Are we maybe beginning to see a changing of the Ducks' goaltending duties, letting Gibson finally sort of step into that role as the number one goalie we've all been waiting for since he's been sort of that best goaltender prospect label had been attached to him a number of years ago?
You know, yeah, I think we are seeing the evolution of that. Like you said, he's garnered sort of more of the starts here lately, and I think really, you know, and then through no fault of his own, but you know, once Frederick Anderson, when he went down with that that flu illness that really socked him and knocked him back for a week or two or so, Gibson came in and played really, really well, and sometimes that's maybe the opportunity that you need to sort of establish yourself and take the net, so to speak, and really John has by and large done that, and has emerged as, at least right now, has emerged as maybe the go-to guy for the Ducks. You know, will that be the case going forward? Well, you know, if he continues to play like this, certainly he's going to have a vice grip on that net, and most likely he's going to go tomorrow night against the Jets. It was encouraging to see Freddie last night against Vancouver come in. He hadn't started a game since November 21st, and like you alluded to, had that struggling performance against the Islanders. He looked pretty sharp last night, just had the one goal that got by him in the third period, but that was certainly an encouraging sign there. So in case anything happens to John, whether injury or ineffectiveness, they've got a quality goaltender to still turn to.
Eric, Ryan Getzlaff has obviously struggled this season. He's only got three goals so far, and a lot of people throughout the year have been wondering what's going on with Ryan Getzlaff, a guy who's got a Stanley Cup, who's got the Olympic golds with Team Canada. He suffered that appendectomy. He had an appendectomy early on in the season and missed a little time. Is he still feeling some of the effects of that? Is he suffering through, fighting through an injury, or is there something going on with Ryan Getzlaff? Why do you think he struggled so much in the first 36, 37 games of the season?
Well, you know, that certainly is a big question, and there's a lot to that. I do think that in talking with him and talking about his struggles, over the last few weeks or whatsoever, number one, if you know Ryan, he's not going to pin it on an injury. He's not going to use an injury as an excuse for his play. But he has alluded to, things such as he felt like he wasn't able to, carry the puck, maintain the puck, as comfortably particularly earlier in the year. You know, it makes you wonder if maybe he was dealing with some sort of hand or wrist issue or whatsoever. And even he mentioned it like the other night, he had that backhand goal to win the game in Edmonton. He even mentioned after that game that, That's one of those times or one of those occasions where he felt like he could really put that shot where he wanted to. So those kind of things, those kind of code words that lead you to wonder if he had something, along the lines with his wrist or hand or whatsoever that wasn't able to really let him do what he wanted to do with the puck. But that said, he knows that he has to be better. He knows that he hasn't been up to his usual standards over the first 3 months of the year, and he's really looking forward, having a better second half. You have to, when you only score one goal in say maybe the first 30 games or so, you've got to be better than that. And I think we will see a much better Ryan Getzlaff going forward. It's not going to be the kind of year that we've all accustomed to see him having. But that said, I think he feels like right now, he feels like he, health-wise, he's in his best position that he's been all year.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Eric Stevens of the OC Register. He covers the Anaheim Ducks. And Eric, another player I wanted to ask you about, he had a breakout. We thought it was going to be a breakout playoffs last season. That's Jakob Silfverberg. We know the Ducks acquired him from the Senators in the Bobby Ryan trade a number of years ago, and they'd been waiting patiently for him to sort of break out. And then last year in the playoffs, 18 points in 16 games played. He certainly was a difference maker in the series versus Winnipeg. And then you look at him this season, I mean, he's got 6 points on the year in 37 games. I mean, I don't need to tell you how that's just atrocious production. Why has Silfverberg been so disappointing this year after such a good playoffs last year?
Yeah, you know what, and it is something, because you know, when you look at the offensive struggles of the Ducks, you know, obviously your first points are Ryan Getzlaff, even, you know, Ryan Kessler, you know, even Corey Perry. You know, while he has 13 goals whatsoever, he's still not producing at the level that he's used to. Yeah, Silfverberg is sort of not really flown under the radar, but flown under the radar in terms of the poor play, yeah. You know, along the lines of several of the Ducks there. And yeah, it's you know, it is a little bit mystifying, because you're right. It was safe to wonder and assume and think, you know, this is a player that's really ready to bust out there. We saw what he did in those playoffs. He really found some real chemistry there with Ryan Kessler. And you just thought he would take off from there. You know, to me, it appears and it looks like, you know, he at least start of the year hasn't been skating as well as he did at the end of last year. And when you're not skating well, you're not able to get space. You're not able to get that extra step or two beyond defenders. That extra sort of split second or so that you need in order to make plays there on the ice. I think what's more troubling with him is we know he's got a terrific shot. I mean, we've seen it in the shootout. He's so successful at it. He's got that great wrist shot, but he hasn't been able to either get it off. And it's really the lack of scoring chances to me is the real concern of why Jakob hasn't been producing at all offensively.
You know, Eric, as you know, earlier in the season, the Anaheim Ducks were struggling, and many thought that Bruce Boudreau's job might be in jeopardy, and I remember we were talking to you about it earlier this season, but lo and behold, he's still the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks, and the Anaheim Ducks now find themselves only a couple of points behind the Arizona Coyotes for second in the Pacific Division. Of course, the LA Kings are running away with it a little bit with 50 points now, but do you think the rest of the Anaheim Ducks, the players in the dressing room, They've kind of rallied around and rallied behind Bruce Boudreau, knowing that he could have easily lost his job earlier this season?
You know what? I think there's something to that. I think really the telltale sign, you know, with, you know, whether a coach has lost his room or not, is in those struggles, in those games, you know, early in the year, you know, when they started 1-7-2, you know, or even when they've had the games where they'd have a win and then they take a couple of steps back or whatsoever, you never got the sense that there was that game where they were just blown out and non-competitive. I think throughout all this, by and large, the Ducks have been pretty competitive in their games. And I think that speaks to the fact that, you know, Bruce, they're still listening to Bruce. You know, Bruce is a player's coach. I mean, you know, he's a guy where, I think players, you know, generally like personally. And, you know, one where, you know, there's give and take between player and coach. And when you have a coach that is willing to go to bat for you, that's willing to listen to you or whatsoever, you're probably going to give that much more effort for him. So I don't think that there was that sign where they had quit on him. And, you know, like you alluded to it, the division that it is, the fact that it's still very much wide open, and, you know, the hope that some of these veteran guys that have produced in the past are going to start doing it eventually in the future, I think these are some of the reasons why Bruce is still the coach and you know, why they think they can still go on a run here in this second half.
Eric, we'll let you go on this last question. Last night in Vancouver, Kevin Bieksa made his return to the Canucks, having played 10 seasons there. There was a nice video tribute, nice ovation from the crowd in Vancouver. Did you get the impression that, you know, all is well with Bieksa and the Vancouver Canucks organization after, you know, how he was traded this offseason? Did you get the impression there's still maybe some lingering resentment for how it ended there, you know, with Bieksa?
You know, yeah, I talked to him recently about that. He mentioned how initially, you know, when you're told that you're no longer wanted, basically, yeah, you're going to be upset. There's going to be ill feelings, whatsoever. But I think what made him feel, you know, good certainly was that there was interest from San Jose and obviously Anaheim and even other teams. So you go from not being wanted to all of a sudden being wanted by others. So, he mentioned last night that there was a little bit of closure, but I think he has moved on. He's secure in his place in Canucks lore there. You know, he was part of obviously a group that really, was part of, several terrific seasons there, and obviously that 2011 Cup run to Game 7. I think he's secure with that. The fact that you know that you're still wanted around the league, maybe not by the Canucks, but by other teams, I think that allowed him to move on.
Eric Stevens covers the Anaheim Ducks for the OC Register. Eric, really appreciate your time this afternoon, and enjoy tomorrow evening's Jets-Ducks game in Anaheim, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, fellas. I really appreciate it.
Take care, Eric. Thanks very much.
Happy New Year, Eric.
Same
deal. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shot that ricocheted wide, jammed along by Barbario. Score! Second goal of the game for the Canadians, and it's 2-0.
Paul Byron, of all people, getting the game-winning goal yesterday afternoon in the Winter Classic between the Habs and the Bruins at Gillette Stadium, just outside Boston in Foxborough, Massachusetts, the home of the New England Patriots. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life coming up on June the 5th. Join Illegal Curve in raising money for the Riverview Health Center Alzheimer and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. Ezzy, January 1st, come and gone. What did you think of the Winter Classic yesterday between the Bruins and the Habs? Did it tickle your fancy?
Yeah, I watched most of it. I woke up a little bit late because, of course, I was recuperating from a bit of festivities.
Because, of course, I was terribly hungover.
I didn't say that, but I just said I might have slept in a little bit because I was out a little bit late on New Year's Eve. I was doing pre and post with Rick.
Uh-huh.
I went home right after that. I was in bed by 12:30, Drew.
Of course you were.
But, you know, I caught the majority of the game, and it was a pretty entertaining game, and, you know, it was quite the spectacle there. In Boston with 67,000 plus people. You know, obviously, the home fans didn't get the result that they wanted. Montreal, I think, had the largest margin of victory for any outdoor game. Usually the outdoor games are one-goal games. But, you know, I still like watching these outdoor games. And, you know, we played the clip of Paul Byron, and Paul Byron has been a really nice story for the Montreal Canadiens. He's picked up a couple of goals. He's got 7 goals on the season. He was a late draft pick of the Buffalo Sabres back in 2007. But, you know, you had Brendan Gallagher coming back from injury, Drew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he gets the Montreal Canadiens' 3rd goal, which was a batted puck out of the air. It was a really nice setup from Max Pacioretty, who got the Habs' 4th goal. But I really enjoyed it, and, you know, I'm still a fan of, as I mentioned, these games, and Winnipeg's going to get a game in 2017. Toronto's most likely going to get a game in 2017 as well. And even though you might say that these Winter Classic games have lost their cachet a little bit, and I would probably agree with that, I still thought it was a great spectacle. And, you know, you saw Bill Belichick out there earlier skating with Claude Julien, and you saw Mike Condon, you know, honoring Tom Brady on his mask. And, you know, Jeremy Roenick was interviewing Gronk before the game. So you saw the Patriots getting into it. And I think the whole city of Boston really got into this. And that's why I think these games are going to continue. Sure, they're money makers as well.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, most of the people that go to these games, Drew, love them. And regardless if the Boston Bruins didn't win, I think most of the 67,000 people would have said that they're glad they were there.
What do you make of the fact that the road team has won 6 of 8 Winter Classics?
Not much.
Okay. Glad I asked the question.
But, I mean, it is kind of an interesting stat. You'd think that it would be 6 of 8 in favor of the home team, right?
Well, you would think there'd be a home. I mean, yeah, it seems like there's no home ice advantage when it comes to the Winter Classic.
But look at what happens in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
As soon as the Stanley Cup playoffs start and everybody looks at the seeds and you say, okay, home ice advantage means a lot. In fact, it doesn't mean as much as you think it does. And once a team gets down 1 or 2 games in a series, it's been shown that it's clearly a lot harder to come back in a series. So really it means more who wins the first game than who's actually hosting that first game, because home ice advantage isn't really that much of an advantage. You can almost say it's an advantage for the visiting team because there's less pressure on them in certain regards. And for the Winnipeg Jets this year, obviously they would like to start the playoffs at home, considering how bad they've been.
Playoffs.
Well, yeah, that's true too, but they've been so bad on the road that it probably would be a disadvantage for the Winnipeg Jets. But, you know, I wouldn't read too much into it, but it was certainly a great hockey game. I mean, you saw some really nice goals. Pacioretty's goal was a really nice goal. We mentioned Gallagher's goal, even Desharnais's goal, which was kind of on a bit of a rebound. I thought Desharnais had a good game. And for the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, this is really just another game for them in terms of they needed the 2 points, right?
Sure.
The Montreal Canadiens have been struggling. December. They've been struggling, Drew, without Carey Price, and Mike Condon earlier in the season was playing better and he struggled. So for the Montreal Canadiens, they were looking at this not like we want to go out there and put on a nice show for the fans. They wanted to leave that game with the 2 points, and they did.
There's a hilarious list on Deadspin of some of the weapons that were seized outside of Gillette Stadium prior to the
like razor blades?
No, like a crossbow, a meat cleaver, a wrist rocket, a taser.
Hold on, what's a wrist rocket?
I don't know. And
like a slingshot?
I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at, there's a picture on Deadspin and a katana. I don't know what a katana is either, but these are some.
Is it a Chris katana?
That's very clever. That's well done. You should be sponsored by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club with that
actually,
kind of line.
Actually, I am.
I know. I don't know what a katana is, but I mean, the weaponry that was. Yeah, I mean, our producer Rory seems to know what that is, but I don't think I want to get hit by it in any event. Gary Bettman was on the broadcast talking about upcoming Winter Classics, and of course he mentioned Winnipeg. Here's Gary Bettman from yesterday.
We haven't settled on a date that we're ready to announce. We do owe Winnipeg a game, and we would have been there last year, but for the Grey Cup and some complications, but it's a testament. By the way, all this speculation, all these cities that want it, tells you how vibrant this is in an event, and that's nothing but good news. Our clubs, the cities we play in, our fans, and the players can't get enough of these.
Worth noting, of course, that Winnipeg's game, I mean, I'd be shocked beyond words if it was an actual Winter Classic on January 1st, which is the marquee event, as opposed to just being a Stadium Series game, which is what I'd expect it to be, at some other random time during the course of the year. The Leafs are favored to actually get the Winter Classic at BMO Field next year, which would be the January 1st extravaganza that you see broadcast nationally on NBC and everything else.
Yeah, and I think that fans here in Winnipeg are very excited for the outdoor game. As you mentioned, Drew, it's not going to be the Winter Classic. It'll probably be the Heritage Classic Stadium Series game. And it'll be probably February or March of 2017. We're obviously going to let everybody know when we hear about that on this station. What's also interesting is it came out of Ottawa that Jacques Demers is kind of spearheading a movement to have an outdoor game in Ottawa on Parliament Hill. So
that would be unique. That's something I would at least tune in to see, because it would be it would be a unique venue. I mean, with all due respect, you know, does BMO Field get me excited as a venue for anything? I mean, does Investor Group Field get me excited for a venue for anything? I mean, that's my problem with the Winter Classic. I mean, yeah, they seem to be sought after, but they're sought after just because, you know, they'll sell 35,000 tickets at a huge premium if it's here in Winnipeg, as opposed to, you know, at being a game at MTS Center.
Right, and you could
lining the pockets of True North more than anything than it is for the fans, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, no, I mean, I disagree with that a little bit. I still think the fans, even though, you know, it's going to be a little bit more expensive than your typical hockey game, right? I still think the fans are behind this. Sure, there's the element of capitalism behind it, but isn't there the element of capitalism behind everything?
I'm not objecting to it. I just think that the idea that it's this overwhelming celebration of hockey and getting back to the roots of hockey, yeah, and blah, 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 blah. I don't think it's that at all.
Look, Drew, I agree with you. I think the football stadium hockey game has been overdone. We've seen a lot of hockey games at football stadiums. I think as far as the spectacle goes, yeah, I agree with you. It might be nice to see hockey games in different venues to kind of increase the aura of the game. So I'm in agreement with you, and that's why Parliament Hill would be really cool.
And it would be fantastic. You know, when it was at Wrigley Field, well, Wrigley Field is an iconic venue for sports. Fenway Park is an iconic venue for sports. I mean, Gillette Stadium is a football stadium. It's not what
they've
I would
won a lot
as,
of Super Bowls there,
yeah,
right?
They, no, they didn't win them there. They won them in other cities.
The team has won the
team,
Super Bowl.
I wouldn't describe it as iconic. There's nothing memorable about it. You know, the Big House in Michigan or in Ann Arbor, where the Wings and the Leafs played a couple years ago.
Yeah, there's 100,000 people,
and it's a huge number, but it's not an iconic venue in sports. And I mean, when it was in Buffalo, it was unique because it was the first one. But you know, when it was at, you know, there's just so many of them that haven't been what I would describe as overwhelmingly unique, because the facilities that they're in aren't unique and aren't exciting. I mean, there's talk that Dallas is going to get one because they're going to put 110,000 people into AT&T Stadium where the Cowboys play. And sure, that's a lot of people, and it's impressive to see that many people watching a hockey game, but nothing about it excites me, you know, unless I'm there, which I'm not. That's where the excitement comes from, being involved in the atmosphere. Watching it at TV, yeah, take it or leave it.
What about if you had like a game, you know, on top of a mountain on the Canadian Rockies or something?
I would watch
like that.
That would be unique. Like if you got thrown, if you got body checked through the glass and you like fell off the side of a mountain, or I would watch that.
Or maybe instead of an Investors Group Field in 2017, they have you know, a game in a canola field outside of Winnipeg, maybe in the Interlake, as opposed to in a football stadium, something like that. We don't have any mountains here.
That would be odd, but sure, I would watch that. I mean, why don't you set up stands and play on like Frozen Lake Winnipeg or something? That would be something worth watching. It's just, you know, the venues that they're reduced to now are just sort of stadiums. They're not iconic stadiums by any stretch. And that's, you know, I thought that Dodger Stadium, when they played there, that was a unique venue, because Dodger Stadium's a beautiful stadium. You got the mountains in the background and everything else. And that's, you know,
it was very picturesque.
Yeah, it's just, I'm a little bit over the Winter Classics is all I'm saying. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we talk about Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
It's good to feel normal again and be out there with them. And, honestly, today was a little bit of a lighter practice. You know, they were getting ready for tomorrow's game. So, but it was, you know, still a lot of fun to be out there with them. You know, there hasn't been any pain with it. You know, basically since surgery, I mean, obviously a couple of days after, but it's felt pretty good for a long time. But obviously, you just got to wait for it to heal.
Some anonymous rookie named Connor McDavid speaking about his injury. Member of the Edmonton Oilers, of course, been out of the lineup for a number of months now with a broken clavicle. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday evening. The Jets and the San Jose Sharks later on tonight. from the SAP Center in San Jose. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. A lot of people are taking to my idea about the Winter Classic not being at Investors Group Field, but rather being on Lake Winnipeg. Frank Zappia in particular says he can sell brisket and pulled pork from his cottage if we play the game there. So, you know, apparently it's a burgeoning idea. We'll drive everybody out to Lake Winnipeg area and play the game on the frozen lake.
There's certainly a lot of places here in Winnipeg where you could have the game, a lot of lakes and rivers and stuff like that. What about a game out at Lake of the Woods? That'd be pretty cool too. But I like your idea, Lake Winnipeg, but it's going to be at Investors Group Field, but there's certainly no shortage of creative venues that we could come up with, right?
Exactly right. Anyways, let's talk about Connor McDavid. You know, close, probably within a few weeks from getting back into the Oilers lineup. And, you know, fortunately for the Edmonton Oilers, even though they are in last place in the Pacific Division is so terrible that they are certainly still right in the thick of things when it comes to a playoff spot. I'd say it would be an upset for the Oilers to get back into it, but getting a guy like McDavid back into your lineup is certainly going to provide a significant boost to the Oilers' fortune. And I'd say, you know, stranger things have happened, and in the crappy Pacific Division, why not?
And Drew, it's amazing, but Connor McDavid has now been out for 8.5 weeks. He hasn't played since November 3rd, and Jim Matheson of the Edmonton Journal reported yesterday that it's possible that he's back for the January 16th game in Edmonton against the Calgary Flames, which is before the Oilers head out on a 3-game road trip before the All-Star break, which is, of course, at the end of January. So you're right. It's looking like Connor McDavid could be back as early as 2 weeks from now, probably at the very latest 3 weeks from now. He'll certainly be back for February, which is good news for Jets fans who have tickets to that March game.
Sure.
Not that he was ever going to be out until March, but it's just good to know that he's going to be back well before that March game in Winnipeg. So, you know, you look at the Oilers, they're 10-16 without Connor McDavid. They've been clearly missing him, and they're also missing Nail Yakupov, who's about to come back from an injury. So this Edmonton Oilers team, I would agree with you, Drew, even though the Pacific Division's awful, and the only team that's really playing that well in that division is the LA Kings, I think it would still be a surprise for them to make it, because you've got to expect the Anaheim Ducks are going to turn it on in the second half. Calgary Flames, I would expect to be competitive. Even the Vancouver Canucks, I think, will be competitive. San Jose Sharks, who the Jets play in 3 hours here, they're still in the hunt for a playoff spot, and they've got that veteran team. So I agree with you. It all comes back to goaltending for me, though.
Sure.
Cam Talbot hasn't gotten the job done. He's kind of been hit and miss, and Anders Nielsen has had to step in for the Oilers at times. You know, the Oilers, as of late, after they went on that winning streak there, they've started to struggle now here, losing 1-0 to the Anaheim Ducks the other night. So I agree with you. I think McDavid will help them, and he was certainly playing well when he went down with an injury. He was at a point-per-game clip, so he'll come back and he'll make them better offensively, but to me, the problem with the Oilers hasn't been offense. Yeah, they got a lot of good players. It's the defense has been suspect, and the goaltending hasn't been very good.
Oilers and Coyotes tied at 3 goals apiece late in the third period, an afternoon contest in Edmonton. In Los Angeles, the Kings are up 2-1 on the Flyers, also late in the third period. If you're the Oilers and you get Nail Yakupov back and you get Connor McDavid back, and you know, you've successfully treaded water, I suppose, while those two players have been out of your lineup, you look at things as they stand in the Pacific Division, you probably say to yourself, you know, why not us? You know, why can't it be us to go on a winning streak? It's not like they have to play unbelievably well to get into a playoff spot in the Pacific Division. If they played well just in their divisional games, they would probably be competitive enough, because everybody in the Pacific sucks, and they only win if they seem to be playing each other. Of course, the Los Angeles Kings are a separate, you know, entity aside from all this, but you look at that division, it's just lousy.
And what's unfortunate about the Edmonton Oilers, and you know, you mentioned their last place in the Western Conference right now, is that Taylor Hall is having arguably his best season in the NHL, and Leon Draisaitl has been amazing in his second year for the Oilers. He's at a point per game after not starting the season in the NHL. Remember, we were talking to Dave Jamieson of TSN 1260 in Edmonton about that a couple weeks back. They've been getting some pretty good performances from their young players. But then when you talk about the injury to Connor McDavid and Dale Yakupov and the fact that the defense has been surprisingly not better than it was last year, even with the addition of a guy like Andre Sequeira, the Oilers, I still think, are trending in the right direction. Now, you would think that if they get the first overall pick again this year, I guess nobody would be surprised. But the way things are going right now, they're not out of that conversation, right? There's only one other team right now who has less points than them, and that's Columbus. So you'd expect the Oilers to probably turn it up a little bit and become a little bit more competitive in the Pacific Division. But the way things are going right now, they already find themselves 5 or 6 points behind the closest team to them in their division. So it might be a situation, again, where the Oilers are drafting in the top five.
Well, you look at the Pacific Division and you take the Kings out of it because they're actually a good hockey team. The Coyotes, they're 7-1-1 against the Pacific Division. They're 4-5 against the Central. The Canucks, they're 6-2-3 against the Pacific Division. They're 2-5-2 against the Central. The Sharks, they're 4-4-1 against the Pacific. They're 1-5-1 against the Central. The Ducks, they're 6-3-4 against the Pacific. They're 2-6-2 against the Central. The Flames and the Oilers, not great against the Pacific. The Flames are actually the only team there who's got a good record against the Central Division at 5-5. So, if it wasn't for these teams beating up on one another, I don't know who they'd be beating. They're that bad. So the Oilers probably say, hey, McDavid's back, Yakubov's back, why the hell not?
Right, and you mentioned that the Oilers are playing the Arizona Coyotes right now as we're on air, and you look at the Coyotes and you say, okay, well, they've got certain flaws, but they just beat the Jets a couple of nights ago, and they've been good all year.
The Jets certainly have certain flaws, too.
Well, they're a team that has been really, they have benefited from having Max Domi and Anthony Duclair in the lineup. Antoine Vermette has come back. He's played well. Shane Doan is having a really good season, even though he's towards the end of his career. So you look at that division, you say the Oilers might be able to get back into it. But for me, Drew, it all comes back to the defense. And they're one of the worst teams defensively right now, if you want to look at the goals against per game that they're giving up. And they just have to be better. And if that doesn't change, sure. Players like Hall and Draisaitl and Eberle, and when Connor McDavid comes back, they're going to get their goals, right? Sure. But they're going to have to win games 4-3, 5-4, and that's not really easy to do on a consistent basis. They have to get better defensively. They've improved under Todd McClellan, mm-hmm. but they're still not anywhere close to where they need to be, in my opinion, for this team to be a playoff team.
While we're talking sort of about the Pacific Division, the NHL has announced the four captains for the upcoming 3-on-3 All-Star tournament, or whatever you want to call it.
Captain Scotty.
Jaromir Jagr of the Florida Panthers is going to be the captain of the Atlantic Division. Perfectly fine with that. Pardon me, the Metropolitan. No, that's the Atlantic Division.
Yep.
The Floortheast, as I like to call it. Patrick Kane of the Blackhawks, he's the captain of the Central Division. Alex Ovechkin of the Washington Capitals, the captain of the Metropolitan Division. No problems with any of those three. And then the captain of the Pacific Division, John Scott of the Arizona Coyotes. The NHL wants to let fans vote. This is what you get if you let fans vote. The All-Star game's a sham. Why not let John Scott play in it? I don't care.
Yeah, this doesn't bother me at all. Hey, good for John Scott. The fans voted him in. As you mentioned, the NHL has set this up so that whoever the fans vote in gets in.
Yeah.
John Scott got the most votes. He's the captain. I think it's just going to be hilarious to see John Scott out there 3-on-3 because he's not very fleet of foot.
He'll play 8 seconds of the first shift and then jump over the boards and go for a line change as much as possible. My hope is that maybe the NHL, next year they're going to have this bye week introduced, whatever, right? They announced that earlier. Why not just get rid of the All-Star game and do the bye week built around what used to be the All-Star break? Nobody cares about the All-Star game.
Yeah, I don't.
It's unwatchable. A 3-on-3 tournament like this is going to be, it's not going to be exciting. 3-on-3 is exciting in small doses, not when you're being bludgeoned over the head with it like the NHL knows how to do.
Well, I think 3-on-3 the format of 3-on-3 will be more exciting than the 5-on-5. I'm not necessarily saying it's going to be a barn burner, but I think the format change will be good and will be more conducive to wide open offensive hockey. But I think at the very least, if they do have a problem with it, and I don't know if Gary Bettman and the NHL have a problem with John Scott being in the All-Star game, because he's certainly not an All-Star caliber player. But again,
it's not an NHL caliber player.
When fans can control who gets in based on who they're clicking on their laptop or on their iPhone,
yeah,
that's going to happen, right? So maybe they decide to change the format and not allow someone like him to get into the All-Star game. But because of the format, the way it is, I think it serves the NHL right that a guy like John Scott is in the game. And I think, again, good for him, because you know he's not a guy that's ever going to win any individual awards or get into an All-Star game based on someone picking him to be in the All-Star game. So he was voted in. It's funny, and you know, it'll be great for him to have a good weekend with all of the great players in the NHL. And, you know, why not?
Sure. Why not? Exactly right. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, we'll talk about our New Year's resolutions. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, brought to you by Royal Sports, the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboard since 1974. You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Yeah!
One final segment this Saturday evening here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg. Richard Pollock will be back for Wednesday's NHL This Week show. The season, or the 2016 debut of NHL This Week, of course, coming up on Wednesday. This final segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey for 30 years. Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, two shows featuring Sean Lacumber. He's been in town. He had a great New Year's Eve at Rumors. Sold out shows everywhere he goes. Check him out. Tickets available. RumorsComedyClub.com. And don't forget upcoming concert series events with Donnell Rawlings from January 20th through 23rd. And then, of course, Dave Coulier from Full and Fuller House fame. Fuller House, of course, which will debut in 2016.
Cut it out, Drew.
Cut it out. Right is right, Ezzy.
Are we going to play hockey with Uncle Joey? Have we decided that yet?
We haven't decided yet. We talked about that story previously on the program last time he was in town at Rumors. We had an opportunity to play some shinny with him and had a good skate.
If we need to get him equipment.
He brought his own equipment last time. We'll hook him up with equipment. He brought his own equipment last time. I don't know if that's still the policy.
And if he needs a Red Wings jersey, we got him covered.
We brought him a Red Wings jersey.
We'll get him
last
one from
time.
Keener Jerseys. We got him covered.
He's all good. We'll see if we can set it up as per usual. Of course, coming up at Rumors. Check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Last segment here, Ezzy, your New Year's resolutions.
I like to call them actually Ezolutions.
Ezolutions. That's a good one. I like that. Yep. So what's your Ezolution?
Well, I have a few here. Okay. Let's start off with the Winnipeg Jets, and I think this is pretty obvious here.
So these are your resolutions with regard to the Winnipeg Jets.
Ezolution.
That's what I said, Ezolution.
Oh, I thought you said resolution.
No, Ezolution. I have to make it sound as stupid as possible, so Ezolution of this.
So my first Ezolution for the Winnipeg Jets is they have to make a point of not taking as many penalties. And we saw that against the Arizona Coyotes. It cost them the game, really, with Arizona Coyotes scoring while Andrew Ladd was in the penalty box. And, you know, they still remain the most penalized team or the second most penalized team in the NHL. And I think the Winnipeg Jets need to make a point of taking less penalties, because it's going to be tough for them to get in the playoffs now, Drew. We've talked about it. They're seventh in the Central. They need points. It's going to be an uphill climb from now until the end of the season, and they got to keep out of the box in order for them to be successful. And I think that they have the ability to do it. I think it's obviously a young team, but you know, I think that they have shown time and time again they have the ability. And maybe, you know, we saw it a little bit in the Pittsburgh game on December 27th, but we need to see that out of the Jets. So that's my resolution for the Jets.
Just one?
Well, I have one for myself and Gary. I thought we were just doing one for. Well, what's your resolution?
The thing I would like to see more from the Jets in 2016. I mean, penalties, obviously, that's the obvious one. I think they need to. The fact that they haven't been able to take any games into overtime or the shootout is certainly a significant reason for why they're in the last place in the Central Division right now. There's been, I mean, you can count, you know, just sort of off the top of your head, you can probably think of 4 or 5, maybe half a dozen games where the Winnipeg Jets should have at least earned a point in the first half for the first part of the 2015 Jet season. Now, the fact that they hadn't probably makes it a little too late to just say that they can earn 1 point in a lot of these games. They need to get clean 2-point wins pretty much from here for the next 2 months if they really want to be playoff contenders. But, you know, that's something that I think that they should try and work on, in addition to, of course, the real one is the penalties, though. That's the one that has to change. You know, we started off the show talking about Paul Maurice's reaction to the penalties against Arizona. I don't know if it's going to change tonight against San Jose. And if it doesn't, I don't know what's really left for him to say. He's, you know, cajoled. He's probably talked about it quietly. He's talked about it in a loud manner. If they keep taking stupid penalties, maybe they're just a stupid team. I mean, sometimes you are what you are. And, maybe it'll change. Maybe finally what he said after the game in Arizona comes through loud and clear, and this team turns over a new leaf and they become a brand new disciplined hockey team for the most part.
They're the only ones that can change it, right, Drew?
Yeah.
At this point, the coaches can tell them to stay out of the penalty box and tell them that taking penalties is a problem, but it's been a problem now for a year and a half. So at this point, this group of players, they control this. And I think it remains to be seen, but I do think it's in this group to stay out of the box more.
Your New Year's resolution for Gary Bettman.
My resolution.
Sorry, your resolution.
For Gary Bettman is to not fix what isn't broken.
I
think we talk about constantly how the lack of goal scoring in the NHL is a big problem. They need to make the nets bigger. They need to reduce the goalie equipment, or they need to change this rule or change that rule. I think the NHL is in a great position, and sure, maybe, you know, there's maybe too much parity in the NHL and you don't have that many excellent elite teams. I think right now there are two, Dallas and Washington. And Chicago, come playoff time, is certainly an elite team, having won 3 cups in 6 years. But I think for Gary Bettman, the NHL and the NHLPA, I think, the competition committee, they have to stop looking at ways to fix things that there's nothing wrong there. And I think, sure, maybe you look at reducing the size of goalie equipment. But I think for the most part, especially this year with Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn and Patrick Kane, you're going to have at least 3 players with over 100 points this year. I think last year with the lack of a 100-point player, that really affected things. But I think for the NHL, tweaking rules is one thing, and looking, reviewing the coach's challenge, things like that, Drew, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think these kind of drastic changes, especially at improving goal scoring, I think for the most part, a lot of them are not very good ideas.
I like that one. My Gary Bettman resolution, or my NHL-wide resolution. Do I have to call them resolutions too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go for it.
Promote your star players. For years upon years, and, you know, we've talked about it on this show, the NHL just promotes cities. They promote the Flyers because they're from Philadelphia. They promote the Rangers because they're from New York. If your star player happens to play on a team that isn't the most marquee city, Connor McDavid in Edmonton, for example, still promote them. People come to see the star players, and they should be able to see, the NHL should promote those players. Patrick Kane, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, you just mentioned them. They all play in American markets. Promote Patrick Kane. I know the baggage he comes with. Promote Jamie Benn. Promote Tyler Seguin. These guys aren't choir boys, maybe, but how many athletes really are? Promote them. Promote the hell out of them. The NFL does it all the time. That's what's going to drive people to watch the games, is promoting your star players.
I think that's a good one.
Thank you. And your final New Year's resolution for yourself.
Yeah, well, this is more of an illegal curve resolution.
Oh, okay.
And I actually think that you're going to like this one, Drew.
Here's hoping.
My 2016...
Spend less time together, fingers crossed?
My 2016 resolution is to not be as hard on you, actually.
I don't believe it.
Sometimes, you know, some people are telling me that I'm too hard on Drew, so my resolution is going to be don't be as hard on you and actually be harder on Richie.
Oh, good. I like that. Be less mean to me, be more mean to Richard. I'm totally on board with that. For the record, though, anybody that says to you that you need to be less mean to me doesn't understand our dynamic, that we've all been doing this for years together, and that...
Yeah, we've hated each other for years.
Exactly.
This isn't a new thing. The hatred's been there for a long time.
As mean as you guys ever are, it's certainly water off of a duck's back.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezzy, you got 30 seconds. Go quick.
Speaking of ducks, I mean... I'm giving my cheer to Teemu Selänne, who had his number 8 retired. His national team jersey was retired last Wednesday in Finland at the World Junior Championships. So, I mean, greatest Jet of all time, greatest European player of all time, I think. So it was great to see Timu's number retired.
I'm going to cheer the city of Swift Current and Sheldon Kennedy. He was brought back to Swift Current yesterday. Of course, Sheldon Kennedy was a star player for the Swift Current Broncos, and that's where the Graham James situation happened. And for years, it was sort of unspoken in Swift Current, and they're throwing open the curtain there and taking the lead on preventing sexual abuse and sexual assaults, and they're sort of acknowledging their past and bringing it forward to a new light. So good on them for shedding light on an unpopular subject. That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News, Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster, Michael Trakos of the National Post, and Eric Stevens of the OC Register. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Psycho on Life, and Keener Jerseys. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks very much for joining us. Hustler and Lawless are next here on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Visit the new luxury auto and art gallery at Waverly and McGilvery. The Jets curve.